Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tacktheratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Fredita!
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent 6 of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with 2 German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to the show, everybody. My name is Charlie Robinson. I am the host of Macroaggressions. How you doing? We're going to get into a cheery topic, the depopulation agenda. But before we do that, I want to shout out my sponsors real quick. CuriosityStream Online. Thousands of documentaries. Unlimited viewing. If you're a geek like me, way into documentaries, you got to check them out. They have award-winning exclusives and originals. You can watch them anywhere, anytime. High-definition quality. Unlimited streaming of thousands of shows. Stream them on your laptop, your TV, your phone, your tablet. You can view them offline if you want. There is worldwide access for $2.99 a month. That's 10 cents a day. Where are you going to get an education for 10 cents a day like that? Curiosity Stream is worth checking out. The link is in the description. Any support for our sponsors directly translates into support for the show. We certainly do appreciate it. And our second sponsor, Scribd. S-C-R-I-B-D, Scribd is unlimited e-magazines, e-books, audiobooks, documents. They've got so many magazines, books, and audiobooks that you will never make it through them in a month. Read as many of them as you want. You can sign up for a free 30-day trial. If you don't like it, cancel. It doesn't cost you anything. $9.99 a month. Scribd is amazing. If you're into, if you're listening to this, you're probably also into audiobooks. So check them out. Link is in the description as well. If you support our sponsors, it directly translates to support for this show. And God knows we need it. We certainly do appreciate your support. So, well, let's get into the depopulation agenda. You ever get the feeling that your government is trying to kill you? I mean, they are. I mean, it sounds crazy when you say it like that, but they just seem to be working against our best interests everywhere we turn. There's another program that the government has instituted that just doesn't seem to be in our best interest. And yet here we are pretending that it doesn't exist and you know, looking the other way or convincing ourselves that it's all in our heads. You have to kind of remember that the government that we are living under in the United States, and for those listening outside of the United States, I would imagine your government's no better, maybe even worse. They hate us. They hate the people. They wish that there were fewer of us. They wish that the smart ones that are digging into their corruption, they certainly wish that all of us would go away. They don't appreciate us sticking our nose into their business, although technically it's our business too. I mean, we live on this planet. We live in these countries. Like, it's about us. The government is supposed to serve us. Of course, somewhere along the line, that has been twisted up. And they believe that we work for them and they can tell us what to do. But if they had it their way, and if you caught a lot of these people on an honest moment, which is asking a lot for people in government, they would probably admit that things would move a lot easier, a lot smoother for them if there were fewer of us around. And when you start talking about the depopulation agenda, that is a really fast way to get you looked at funny by your friends and family, the friends that are not into this sort of stuff. Anyone that actually digs into it, though, it takes about 30 minutes of research and looking around and reading, watching videos and, all that stuff to figure out that there's a lot to this. I know it sounds crazy. I realize that. Hell, the first time I heard it, it sounds bananas. And also, probably the first time I heard it was Alex Jones screaming, you know, they're coming to get us. They're all going to, the Chi-Coms are coming to kill us. And you're like, okay, like, I kind of believe you, but I need more, you know, I need to hear more. So I did a whole chapter on it called The Depopulation Agenda, and finding quotes that backed up this agenda was surprisingly easy. I mean, they're everywhere. It's weird to me. Like, if I was into something really horrific, I would, I imagine I would want to keep it quiet. You know, I don't know that I would really be open about it or advertising. I'm talking about something that's really bad. Like, I'm advocating for something that's just where normal people would look at you like, what it would just matter with you. But the people that wind up in like high positions of power or really wealthy families and everything, they speak openly about this. Like, they're not ashamed or embarrassed or anything. It's part of what they believe. And it's weird. It's obviously evil, but it's also weird to even feel free enough to talk about that. Like, yeah, I think we should reduce the population, you know? I'm just going to go through. This is a quote from Michael Snyder, who's an author. He's talking about this. He says, unfortunately, there's a growing number of scientists, politicians, and global opinion makers that believe that we must reduce the size of human population for the good of the planet. They are convinced that humanity is causing global warming, killing off other species, and making this planet unlivable. In their quest to save the future of the planet, they are becoming bolder and bolder with their calls for population control. They love death because they believe that it will help save the Earth. They figure that with fewer humans around, there will be fewer carbon emissions, less pollution, and more room for other species. So, how will this be achieved? Afterbirth abortions, mobile euthanasia teams, sperm-destroying ultrasound technologies, and putting contraceptives in the tap water are just some of the ways that are being proposed to reduce current human numbers. This hatred of life and love of death is being taught in colleges and universities all over the Western world, and this population control philosophy is becoming increasingly dominant with each passing year. Now, if you think that he's wrong about this, all you have to do is look at the two-child policy in China. I mean, they outright put a cap on the number of kids that could be born. There was a huge push to have female, you know, babies aborted. And it was in place for 2 decades plus in China. So anyone that tells you that there's, that, you know, that this is all in your head or this is just some conspiracy theory, like you can just very easily point them to the two-child policy in China and just say, listen, it's happening. This is not some dystopian future nightmare scenario that we're talking about. Like the future's now in China and for a lot of things, talk about social credit systems and, you know, dystopian nightmares, like the future that we envisioned in Blade Runner, or Minority Report or, you know, Terminator and everything, like that's either already happening in China or damn near happening. You know, it's a scary thing. Well, the scary thing, I should say, is that this is not some theoretical idea that, you know, may emerge sometime in the future. This is a real program that Michael Snyder is talking about. It's operational now. In the Netherlands, in fact, they have 6 different euthanasia teams that are going door to door to offer their service. Listen to this. The project, which has provoked sharp criticism from doctors, is the brainchild of the Dutch, largely donor-funded Right to Die-NL. It follows the government's 2002 decision to legalize euthanasia, making the Netherlands the first country in the world to do so. Walburg de Jong, a spokesman for the organization, said that since the ruling, some 3,100 assisted suicides had been carried out annually. The mobile euthanasia teams, she said, operated free of charge and were designed to make it easier for patients enduring indeterminable suffering to end their lives. Well, that's certainly nice of them to make the services free. I mean, what kind of an asshole charges the elderly to kill them, after all? But it's weird to me that the concept of thinning out the herd is suddenly gaining traction, but then again, I think about how much easier it would be to get around in traffic or go through the TSA line at the airports and everything. And I think there might be something to it. Obviously, I'm being facetious there, but the truth of the matter is that the people that are in high positions of power, they aren't kidding about that. They do see the rest of us as being kind of in the way of them, sort of, you know, screwing up their lives. And it's not to say that you have to be Mao Zedong to have, you know, to want these sort of population control philosophies. I mean, Jacques Cousteau, remember him? Like, sweet old Jacques Cousteau, scuba diver, you know, inventor and save the oceans guy. He said, in order to stabilize world population, we must eliminate 350,000 people per day. It's a horrible thing to say, but it's just as bad not to say it. No, it's not. No, it's not just as bad not to say it. Perhaps you don't understand what not saying it means. It's pretty fucking bad to say we need to get rid of 350,000 people per day. Like, who knew Jacques Cousteau was such a dick? You know, Ted Turner said, a total world population of 250 to 300 million, a 95% decline from present levels would be ideal. There is a very weird line of thought for some people that consider themselves to be above another class of people. When they look at other people that they consider to be like inferior to them, whether, you know, whether it's based on actual criteria or some abstract sliding scale of psychopathy, they seem to conclude that the best thing would be if those other people were removed from the planet. I mean, why must this be done? And why must it be done so quickly? Like Ted Turner is talking about removing like 7 billion people from the planet I mean, I'm sure he's not volunteering himself, but it's strange to me that they want this done so, you know, they want it done in the first place is weird, but that they want it done so quickly. But, you know, they're talking about everyone else kind of screwing up the gene pool and putting our species at risk for the future, you know, because the product won't be as well built. But never mind the fact that they're the ones having thoughts about indiscriminately mass murdering people for no good reason. These other people are somehow the problem because they like to watch pro wrestling and they think John Travolta is a great actor or something. I mean, they can't help that. What's your problem for advocating for the death of 7 billion people? And if we're really going to prioritize which people need to leave this earth in a hurry, maybe it should be the people calling for 7 billion people to be killed. Like, maybe you're the one screwing up the gene pool with thoughts like that. I mean, keep them to yourself. It's one thing if you're just some dude, you know, sitting out in front of a 7-Eleven drinking Old English all night and you're talking about how everybody's got to go. Well, you're not going to do anything about it. But Ted Turner has access to a shitload of money and he is a full-blown eugenicist. In fact, people think he's the one that put the Georgia Guidestones up. Georgia Guidestones are weird. It's like a Stonehenge mixed with the Ten Commandments, mixed with Waffle House. It's very strange. And it talks about, you know, keeping population, reducing the population to 500 million in balance with nature. What are you talking about balance with nature? Well, says who? These maniacs? I'm not going to listen to them. What do they know about that? Henry Kissinger, serial killer / most likely reptile, said world population needs to be decreased by 50%. I think that's a great idea. Let's start by cutting Henry Kissinger in half. What do you say? Ooh, I better not say that on Twitter. They'll throw me off. Let's throw Henry Kissinger in a volcano, shall we? Zbigniew Brzezinski, who, if you are familiar with this podcast so far, you'll determine that I don't really care for this guy. He said, the major world powers, new and old, also face a novel reality. While the lethality of their military might is greater than ever, their capacity to impose control over the politically awakened masses of the world is at a historic low. To put it bluntly, in earlier terms, it was easier to control 1 million people than to physically kill 1 million people. Today, it is infinitely easier to kill 1 million people than to control 1 million people. I wonder which one he prefers. Past tense, since he's dead. Hey, one less person on the planet. Look, the depopulation agenda is to reduce huge percentages of people, especially those with dark skin, so that the remaining people can be more easily controlled. They want to get rid of the useless eaters, another Henry Kissinger term, and the people that are left over, because they can't get rid of everybody, because they need people to work for them and do, fly the planes and fix their planes and pump for gas. And you know what I mean? They need a certain amount of people to do things, but they don't need that many people. So they're thinking, you know, let's just get rid of half of them. And then the other half that's left over, they'll just be a whole lot easier to control. But, so their line of thinking is the fewer number of people on the planet, the fewer problems for those in power. So, this is from Thomas Ferguson. He's a former official in the U.S. State Department Office of Population Affairs. He says, there is a single theme behind all our work. We must reduce population levels. Either governments do it our way through nice, clean methods, or they will get the kind of mess that we have in El Salvador or in Iran or in Beirut. The population is a political problem. Once the population is out of control, it requires authoritarian government, even fascism, to reduce it. Okay, so they're giving away the game there. That's what it's all about. When you get too many people, You become too big for the government to control. And they work in the government. They run the government. And they don't like that because they want to be in control. And what they're saying here is that when there's too many of us, then they can't control us. So they got to get rid of us. Is that making sense? This is how crazy people think. These are the rantings of maniacs. Obviously, this dude, Thomas Ferguson, is not advocating for him. He's not taking his kids out and shooting them, right? He's talking about everybody else's people. We got to get rid of everybody else. Not us. We're in government. We're important. We have to stay behind. If a giant asteroid hits this, we got to get in our underground bunkers because we're important. I got news for you. The politicians are not important. You want to talk about screwing up the gene pool? All of those people need to be removed. If anyone, if we're prioritizing this, if we're deciding who needs to get, you know, taken out first, I think a strong case can be made that anybody that is working in government is probably should be at the top of the list. I'm not advocating that, obviously, because I'm not a crazy person. But if I were, I'd be saying, let's identify the psychopaths first. There's a disproportionate number of them operating in government. So let's start with them. If you got rid of all the people in government, just that thin little line of people right there, the world would be an infinitely better place. Because the rest of us typically don't think like this, unless maybe we're in line at Costco and then you start fantasizing about how it would be great if you could, like, if like 14 people in line in front of you just vanished. But it's not so much that you want to kill them. It's just like you want to just relocate them to like Guam or something. You know what I mean? Just get them out of your way for a while. But I don't think that that makes you a psychopath. I think that just makes you, you know, somebody that's prioritizing their time. Well, Henry Kissinger has been a scumbag for his entire life, I would presume, but definitely on the record about it for the last 50 years. And one of the things he said was, control oil and you control nations, control food and you control the people. Well, okay. So he's right about that, of course. And if I say that, if that was my quote, it would be viewed as me just sort of making a statement of fact. When Henry Kissinger says it, it sounds more like a plan. And of course, it was a plan. In a now declassified 1974 document, National Security Memorandum 200, Kissinger outlines a plan to use food scarcity as a weapon in order to achieve population reduction in lesser developed countries. In a complete surprise to absolutely no one, Henry Kissinger set out to devise a plan to use the promise of food to manipulate people into acting in a certain manner that aligns with his version, or vision, I should say, of the world. This plan called for a reduction of the population through a combination of birth control, famine, and war. What a nice guy, huh? He wants all those things for everyone else. Well, there's no famine going on in Henry Kissinger's house. I don't know how you're that fat at that age. At 96, aren't old people supposed to be like shriveled up and skinny? He looks like a fat toad. Remember when Steinbrenner called Hideki Arabu a fat toad? Henry Kissinger is a fat toad. He even looks like one. I bet he sits around and eats flies too. When Kissinger left, though, he was replaced by Brent Scowcroft, who is a scumbag of the highest order, as well as the National Security Advisor. He was put in charge of putting Kissinger's insane plan into action. And so anyway, the document, this document that was declassified in 1989, identified 13 countries that were of a particular interest to the United States for geopolitical objectives, and they outlined why population growth and specifically that of young people, who were, you know, the young people were sort of seen as revolutionary, potential revolutionaries, or a threat to U.S. operations. these countries that they outlined to push this population control on were India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Nigeria, Mexico, Indonesia, Brazil, Philippines, Thailand, Egypt, Turkey, Ethiopia, and Colombia. Not a lot of white countries on that list. I wonder why that is. This is part of Henry Kissinger's speech, his acceptance speech in 1973, when he won the motherfucking Nobel Peace Prize for, you know, dropping bombs on Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam. More bombs dropped on Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam than were dropped in all of World War II by both sides, all sides combined times two, just to put that in perspective. That's what Henry Kissinger ordered to be dropped on Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. And he won the Nobel Peace Prize, just like Obama did. So you can, obviously you can figure out what that prize is worth. But this is from his hypocritical acceptance speech, or part of it at least. I'm deeply moved by the award of the Nobel Peace Prize, which I regard as the highest honor one could hope to achieve in the pursuit of peace on this earth. When I consider the list of those who have been so honored before me, I can only accept this award with humility. The people of the United States, and indeed of the whole world, share the hope expressed by the Nobel Peace Prize Committee that all parties to this conflict will feel morally responsible for turning the ceasefire in Vietnam into a lasting peace for the suffering people of Indochina. Certainly, my government, for its part, intends to continue to conduct its policies in such a way as to turn this hope into a reality. What a bunch of bullshit that is. I mean, Henry Kissinger has done more to push war than just about anybody alive on this planet today. For him to win the Nobel Peace Prize, it's a joke, but I think everybody understands that it's a joke. Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize right as he was elected into office, and then set about to set the world record in most drone strikes, you know, and later bragged about it. You know, I'm pretty good at killing people, is what he said. I mean, are you kidding me? I'm sure he was, you know, as he was filling out his kill list, he was wearing his Nobel Peace Prize around his neck as some sort of bizarre, you know, F you to the people that he was murdering. But whether you're talking about Obama or Kissinger or the Rockefellers or the Rothschilds or the Bushes or the Clintons or all these maniacs that are in some sort of high position of either office or prominent family, at their core, what they are, besides the obvious label of psychopath, they are eugenicists. That is a term, that is the term to describe them. They feel that it is their duty to do the hard work, make the difficult decisions of cleaning up this planet. And by cleaning up the planet, we mean, you know, deciding who should stay on the planet and who should be eliminated. And it's all done under the guise of improving the gene pool. And it's all done with a straight face, as if like they're improving the gene pool themselves, which of course they clearly are not. But they treat this, they bring in scientists to back them up, corrupt, dirty, insane scientists like John P. Holdren, guys like that, to back up their vision of this. And they talk about it in terms of scarcity. So they've got to scare the shit out of you in order to go along with this. They talk about, you know, limited resources. Listen, we're not going to have enough clean water. We're not going to have, we don't have enough space. We don't have enough, you know, there's too many people. We don't, you know, it's a strain on our supply chains and all this stuff. Look, who knows? First of all, who knows how many people are on the planet? We're going off numbers that the government gives us. And the government lies will lie to you about, you know, anything and everything. So I don't even know why we believe, you know, what are there, 7.5 billion people on the planet? Who says? I don't know. I don't know if that's a real number or not. But anyway, eugenicist or eugenics is... Well, let me read you Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood, Hillary Clinton's hero. No, I'm not kidding. She said that Margaret Sanger is her hero, which is actually kind of understandable if you know who Margaret Sanger is. Anyway, this is what Margaret Sanger said. Eugenics is the most adequate and thorough avenue to the solution of racial, political, and social problems. Okay. Now, most people think that the Nazis, you know, they think of the Nazis when they hear racial purity, because that's probably the best example of it. You know, it got a little, obviously, it got a bit convoluted during World War II. They weren't just out to purify their race. They were also conquering lands, and they were trying to get rid of the communists, and they were trying to get rid of all these people, all these perceived enemies of them. But Hitler dreamed of a country of tall, blonde, strong Germans, even though he was a short, brown-haired, weak Austrian, which is probably ironic. I get the feeling that maybe at Hitler's house, at Das Führer's house, probably weren't a lot of mirrors around, right? Just the irony of this guy. Same with Heinrich Himmler, who was the head of the SS. He wouldn't qualify to even be in the SS. He was too short. He was wearing glasses. He was not, he didn't look like them. And so, you know, the hypocrites inside the Third Reich were everywhere and on full display. And they looked fucking fantastic in their Hugo Boss made uniforms as they were putting people to death for their religion, sexuality, and basically being gypsies and handicapped. So, nice bunch of people. Here's a quote you don't hear every day. I love Hitler. People like you would be dead, and your mothers, your forefathers would all be gassed. That was John Galliano. You remember that dude, that guy, that fruitcake with a little pirate mustache who was the head designer for Christian Dior? Yeah. You know what? You love Hitler? You know, Hitler gassed homosexuals, right, John? He would have taken one look at that little silly, mustache and frilly shirt that you're wearing, and he would have stuffed your ass in an oven in 2 seconds. So your love of Hitler is kind of misplaced. Oh, by the way, you lost your job over that comment, which was kind of funny. So the Nazis had this, I don't know, I guess you'd call it a prototype or, you know, an ideal version of what the perfect person would look like. So they set about to eliminate those people that definitely did not look like their version of what this person should look like. And so they thought that by eliminating these people, meaning, you know, the Jews, the gypsies, the handicapped, mentally ill, homosexuals, and other subhumans, that they could bring about a rapid change in the gene and cultural makeup of the planet in general and in Germany in particular. And then, you know, once they sort of took care, you know, once they made it like that in their homeland, they would expand to the rest of the Reich, and then they would, once they had cleaned up the gene pool, so to speak, there, then they would export that to the rest of the world. So if Hitler hadn't been stopped, you know, we might have seen that ethnic cleansing continue. But it's not to say that Hitler invented ethnic cleansing, and it's not to say that it ended when he died, because we saw ethnic cleansing happen in Yugoslavia. I mean, so it, as recently as 2 decades ago. So, and we see it in Yemen. So, this is not a new concept, of course. If you're talking about Henry Kissinger, as we have so far in this chapter, it's fair to say that he was quite obsessed with this. I mean, he was really, really into the depopulation agenda. That comes with also being a Satanist, which Henry Kissinger is, with this, in this, you know, cabal of high ranking politicians that are in this very dark art occult group that they show you glimpses of every now and then, but they don't really speak that openly about it as much as they can. But Henry Kissinger said this: depopulation should be the highest priority of foreign policy towards the third world, because the U.S. economy will require large and increasing amounts of minerals from abroad, especially from less developed countries. You mean like Afghanistan? You mean like Afghanistan with several trillion dollars worth of minerals there? And, you know, subhumans, people living in caves, people living in thatched huts, people, you know, riding burros around in, like, Afghanistan. These are the people that write U.S. foreign policy. So it should be no surprise that when the United States invades Afghanistan, oh, by the way, they also loot the place. You know, poppies, opal, you name it, zinc, lithium, anything they can get out of that place, they take it. And they call that the spoils of war, of course. But that's how you think of it. Secretary of Defense William Cohen, back in 1997, said, an advanced form of biological warfare that can target specific genotypes may transform biological warfare from the realm of terror to a politically useful tool. You know, you're the useful tool, William. But you aren't the first, and you won't be the last to call for a culling of the undesirables. This is what eugenics is all about. In fact, so the term eugenics has been around for well over 100 years, and it is defined as a set of beliefs and practices that aim at improving the genetic quality of the human population. The theory is that you can improve humanity by removing certain participants from the gene pool. You can think of this as sort of like an offshoot of Darwinism, but instead of placing an emphasis on the ability to adapt slowly by nature, this speeds up the process by removing the defective parts immediately, while not leaving the process of selecting what is a defective part and what to do about a defective part up to nature. You're sort of making the decision for nature. You're saying these are the traits that we want removed. Now, the way they claim that Darwinism works is that, you know, only, you know, the belief is that Darwinism is that only the strong survive. And that's actually not what Darwinism is. Darwinism says those that are able to adapt will survive. And so it depends on your environment. It's a long, slow process, of course. But if you're an animal that is bipedal, which means you can stand up on 2 feet and you have binocular vision, you can see further away, there's a greater chance that you will be able to see a predator coming to get you, and therefore you will probably live, or at least you have an increased chance of living, as opposed to other species which are not bipedal. They're stuck down on four legs. They can't stand up and see further away. They don't have the right sort of vision, and therefore they will get eaten before you. So this is sort of the theory of Darwinism. It's, you know, those able to adapt will survive. And eugenics just takes that and puts it on steroids. So Thomas Malthus, he was an author and a lunatic, and he doesn't really get much press. But if you ever hear the term Malthusian, it comes from Thomas Malthus. He said, instead of recommending cleanliness to the poor, we should encourage contrary habits. In our towns, we should make the streets narrower, crowd more people into the houses, and court the return of the plague. What an asshole. I mean, seriously, who's calling for the plague? I mean, I guess except Prince Philip, right? Prince Philip is is one that actively, I think his quote was, when I die, I hope I'm reincarnated as a deadly virus so that I could clear out 90% of the world's population. Not exactly going on a greeting card, is it? But look, it's pretty easy to see how this concept of this eugenics concept can be twisted in a very evil direction. And you really need look no further than Germany in the 1930s and 40s to see how things can get out of hand in a hurry, obviously. Margaret Sanger once again said, eugenic sterilization is an urgent need. We must prevent multiplication of this bad stock. That's kind of a bold statement. It's a, I mean, I think a case could be made that Margaret Sanger was the bad stock. She goes on to say, the most merciful thing that a large family does to one of its infant members is to kill it. I mean, she's actually saying this. She's not just thinking this. We all think crazy stuff from time to time, obviously. It's in our head. It doesn't come out of our mouth. Margaret Sanger is the founder of Planned Parenthood. And she, I got to read this again because it is so preposterous that it sounds fake. But this is what Margaret Sanger said. The most merciful thing that a large family does to one of its infant members is to kill it. I mean, I don't even know what to say to that. That's so fucking crazy that it stands on its own, right? But will it surprise you to know that she went on to say this, not in the same sentence, but she said this later on. We do not want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. Too late, you you crazy old racist bitch. The word's out. This is who you are. You want to get rid of the black people and you want to kill babies. Why don't you kill yourself if you're this unhappy with everybody and the way society has turned out? Just kill yourself. I mean, nobody's stopping Margaret Sanger from doing that. By the way, have you ever seen a picture of Margaret Sanger? She's not pretty. I know that comes as not a surprise. But here we go. Leave it up to Hillary Clinton to just come in with the closer on this one. Now I have to tell you, I can't even do her voice. It's too annoying. You'll turn this podcast off. Now I have to tell you that it was a great privilege when I was told that I would receive this award. I admire Margaret Sanger enormously, her courage, her tenacity, her vision. And when I think about what she did all those years ago in Brooklyn, taking on archetypes, taking on attitudes, and accusations flowing from all directions, I am really in awe of her. Wow, I wonder why she was taking on accusations from all directions. Because she's talking about exterminating black people and killing babies. I mean, yeah, she's going to take criticism for that, as she should. Why are you praising her? I guess because you're Hillary Clinton. I guess that's just pretty much the answer to that. But as crazy as as crazy as Margaret Sanger is and Hillary Clinton and apparently Jacques Cousteau and all these guys, they get some run for their money later on here with the likes of a guy named Paul Ehrlich. He wrote a book called The Population Bomb. It says, the first task is population control at home. How do we go about it? Many of my colleagues feel that some sort of compulsory birth regulation would be necessary to achieve such control. One plan often mentioned involves the addition of temporary sterilants to water supplies or staple foods, or to the water supply. With limited distribution of antidote chemicals, perhaps by lottery, doses of the antidote would be carefully rationed by the government to produce the desired population size. Why don't we have a lottery to see who gets to kick Paul Ehrlich in the nuts? I would enter that. But everybody knows the lottery is nothing more than a regressive tax on the poor. So, you know, so maybe who knows? Maybe we just have to do an online, some sort of online draft if you want to kick Paul. But this is what is called the demographic transition. They're very obsessed with demographics, eugenics, thinning out the herd, all that. You want to know who was one of the chief financiers of the scientists working on demographic transition? Jeffrey Epstein. A lot of those scientists that he financed were working on things like that. He had this vision, you know, like a lot of these arrogant maniacs have, that the world would be a better place if there were less of us and more of them, you know, multiples more of them. So he was financing this sort of stuff. So should come as no surprise to anybody. But Paul Ehrlich went on to say this as well in his book, The Population Bomb. A cancer is an uncontrolled multiplication of cells. The population explosion is an uncontrolled multiplication of people. We must shift our efforts from the treatment of the symptoms to the cutting out of the cancer. The operation will demand many apparently brutal and heartless decisions. Let's be honest about something. The cancer is Paul Ehrlich, okay? He wrote this in his book. He's not trying to keep this a secret from anybody. He's actively, you know, he's a fucking Stanford professor, for God's sake. he's not like some ranting lunatic standing on a street corner with a megaphone. Like, the guy worked at Stanford. He was teaching people this. The eugenicists like Paul Ehrlich and Prince Philip, they love to describe people as viruses and cancers because we have like an understanding that these organisms are evil, that they reproduce at an alarming rate, and when they are finished, the host is usually dead. So they're using these terms like cancers and viruses to describe us. Even Agent Smith in The Matrix said, you know what humans are? You're a virus. So they use this terminology to paint a picture of us as being subhuman, of being, you know, something that destroys the host. The host being, in their case, the planet, the population, and that we as people are this virus that's destroying it. Well, it's a very arrogant way of, you know, of viewing the world, but it's how they feel. It's how they see us. But all these guys sort of pale in comparison to Eric Pianka. He's a guy that you've never heard of, I'm sure. He was a University of Texas evolutionary ecologist and a certified asshole for sure. Listen to what he said. It is it's unbelievable that the words came out of his mouth, and that he has a job at a college teaching this, but this is actually what he said. War and famine would not do. Instead, disease offered the most efficient and fastest way to kill the billions that must soon die if the population crisis is to be solved. AIDS is not an effective killer because it is too slow. My favorite candidate for eliminating 90% of the world's population is Ebola, because it is both highly lethal and it kills in days instead of years. We've got airborne diseases with 90% mortality in humans. Killing humans. Think about that. You know, the bird flu's good too. For everyone who survives, he will have to bury 9. Yeah. That's our favorite too, airborne Ebola. It's just... airborne Ebola is just more authentic, you know, I feel. It's just... this is what we're up against. We're up against professors in colleges that are teaching, that they're speculating about which disease they prefer, which is their favorite. Their favorite. Which is your favorite disease? Oh, well, geez, there's so many, it's hard to pick. But I guess I'm going to have to say Ebola, but specifically airborne Ebola. It's my favorite. Kill 90% of the population. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. This is really what these people are saying. That guy gets a pension from the University of Texas. That guy teaches kids. He tells kids this. And if they don't give him the right answer, he gives them an F in their class. You can't graduate from college if you take his class, if you don't pass it. And in order to pass it, you have to agree with this guy that airborne Ebola is your favorite too. Or at least you have to, you know, it's got to be maybe in your top three. You ever hear of the Sierra Club? I think they just like plant trees and stuff like that. They describe themselves as the nation's largest and most influential grassroots environmental organization. With more than 2 million members and supporters, they boast about their success protecting millions of acres of wilderness, as well as helping pass the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and the Endangered Species Act. The Sierra Club is proud to be leading the charge to move away from the dirty fossil fuels that cause climate disruption and toward a clean energy economy. That sounds really great to me. That all sounds very, very nice. Until you hear what David Brower said, he's the first executive director of the Sierra Club. He said, childbearing should be a punishable crime against society unless the parents hold a government license. All potential parents should be required to use contraceptive chemicals, the government issuing antidotes to citizens chosen for childbearing. I wonder if David Brower mentions this in his eHarmony dating profile, because I hear that chicks dig forced sterilization. They're way into that. They're super into that. What the fuck does the Sierra Club have to do with childbirth? Like, maybe their motto should be, shovels are great for planting trees and digging graves. I mean, everybody's getting into the act. One great thing about the internet is that it allows you the ability to hear what other people have said. Like, these people get outed. And then this is out there forever. It winds up in a book. It winds up in my book. And you're running the Sierra Club. It's like talking about, we got to preserve the environment. We got to save these trees. But fuck those people over there. Fuck them. Let them die. We got to save the trees. You understand that? This is madness. But this guy isn't. I got in the mail 2 days ago a letter from the Sierra Club. It had like all these, you know, like those return address stickers that they give you for free. And I looked at it and I laughed out loud. I was like, the Sierra Club, seriously, they're sending me stuff? They have no idea that I'm writing books and mentioning that their executive chairman is a fucking maniac who is out of his mind and wants everybody forcibly sterilized and wants the government to be in charge of who gets an exemption on this. What could possibly go wrong with that? Don't pay your taxes? Don't get the antidote. Sorry. Don't stand and salute the flag when you're supposed to? Don't get the antidote. Don't vote for the right candidate? Don't get the antidote. I mean, this, of course, look, I'm all open. I'm open to interesting and new ways of dealing with society and thinking about things. But this is an idea that needs to go straight into the trash. Okay. The government in charge of issuing antidotes for your chemical birth control. No, thank you. No. How long before the antidotes wind up on the dark web where you can be like, hey man, yo, what you got? And you're like, oh, I got some antidote for you. Oh shit. Okay. How many Bitcoin do you need? It's 2 Bitcoin. Okay. Fuck yeah. I'll take some. I mean, this is insanity being passed off as like a good idea by some, you know, by all accounts, intelligent people. I realize that I keep laughing at this. I'm laughing at it not because it's actually funny, but because it's so preposterous that I can't believe that these people have no hang up about saying it publicly. Like if I had these thoughts in my head, you would never hear them. I'd just be like, okay, I guess I'm kind of defective. And I would never tell anybody that my plan was to eliminate like 90% of the world's population. I just don't know that I could, that would ever go over very well as a conversation, but not these guys, not David Rockefeller, not Henry Kissinger. They want you dead. That's why I started the show with, do you ever get the feeling that your government wants you dead? The answer is, yeah, they do. They want you really dead, and they want you dead like
tonight, you know, if possible. They don't give a shit about you. You are standing in the way. You are creating a roadblock for them to put their plan into place. You're subversive, listening to these conspiracy theorists on the interwebs and everything. They do not appreciate what we're talking about here at all. But, you know, you might be tempted to assume that these people are out on the fringes of society, that they're just weirdos that are not taken seriously, that their plans are a bit outrageous and you know, have no role in our current society. But you would be mistaken, because John P. Holdren was Obama's science advisor. He wasn't Nixon's science advisor 50 years ago. He was Obama's science advisor. This is a current thing. Listen to some of the things that he said. The development of a long-term sterilizing capsule that could be implanted under the skin and removed when pregnancy is desired opens additional possibilities for coercive fertility control. The capsule could be implanted at puberty and might be removable with official permission for a limited number of births. That's from John P. Holdren's book that he wrote in 1977 called Ecoscience. Joseph Mengele gave the book 5 stars, which was nice of him. John P. Holdren was the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, assistant to the president for science and technology, and co-chair of the president's council of advisors on science and technology, informally known as the United States Science Czar. Remember when Obama was naming everyone czars and people thought that was really weird? But that's because it was. So he wrote this book called Ecoscience, and he published it in 1977. And it is like a blueprint for insanity. I want to just read you a couple of the points that are in this book. And yes, I'm being 100% serious. Women could be forced to abort their pregnancies, whether they wanted to or not. The population at large could be sterilized by infertility drugs intentionally put into the nation's drinking water or in food. Single mothers and teen mothers should have their babies seized from them against their will and given away to other couples to raise. People who, quote, contribute to social deterioration, i.e. undesirables, can be required by law to exercise reproductive responsibility. In other words, he says that they should be compelled to have abortions or be sterilized. A transnational planetary regime is what he called it. Planetary regime should assume control of the global economy and also dictate the most intimate details of Americans' lives using an armed international police force. I want to read that again. Just listen to this. This is what he said. A transnational planetary regime should assume control of the global economy and also dictate the most intimate details of Americans' lives using an armed international police force. What is he talking about? He's talking about using the UN. He's talking about using an armed United Nations. He went on to say, one way to carry out this disapproval might be to insist that all illegitimate babies be put up for adoption, especially those born to minors who generally are not capable of caring properly for a child alone. If a single mother really wished to keep her baby, she might be obliged to go through adoption proceedings and demonstrate her ability to support and care for it. Adoption proceedings probably should remain more difficult for single people than for married couples, in recognition of the relative difficulty of raising children alone. It would even be possible to require pregnant single women to marry or have abortions, perhaps as an alternative to placement for adoption, depending on the society. How about this as an idea? Mind your own goddamn business, John. who put you in charge of determining whether or not women can have babies or not? This was Obama's science czar. He didn't, you know, say these things on a podcast somewhere, like in a drunken stupor. He wrote these in a book and he gave them to a publisher, and the publisher went through and goes, yeah, this is a good book. Let's publish this. This looks awesome. We're going to sell a ton of copies of this. Yet he went on to say, in today's world, however, the number of children in a family is a matter of profound public concern. The law regulates other highly personal matters. For example, no one may lawfully have more than one spouse at a time. Why should the law not be able to prevent a person from having more than two children? Chairman Mao thinks you need to settle down a little bit, John. And in case you were wondering, John P. Holdren does have two children, but he does have five grandchildren. So which one has to go, John? Let's not be a hypocrite about this. Pick one. You know, if there was any justice in this world, John P. Holdren, maniac extraordinaire, Obama's science czar, would be sentenced to life at Disneyland, where he would be forced to wear the Mickey Mouse costume and pose for pictures with kids all day long while the song It's a Small World plays on a loop for eternity. And this is... Do you understand now why I don't care for people that work for the government? This is the sort of mentality some of them have. Not all of them, of course. I know I'm generalizing. But you put people in... You've got Margaret Sanger running Planned Parenthood. Like, say what you want about, like, Roe versus Wade and the abortion debate. It's a debate. I see both sides of it. I certainly, as a parent myself, it's got to be a difficult proposition for somebody that has to make that decision. I can't. I have a hard time putting myself in their shoes and really feeling that. I'm not, obviously not a woman, and it has to be difficult. Understatement, obviously. But that's not my decision to make for them. And it's certainly not Margaret Sanger's decision to make, or Henry Kissinger's, or John P. Holdren, or Eric Pianca, or whoever, Prince Philip. They could talk about this stuff because it's their right to talk about it. Free speech and all, you know, all that good stuff. But they are making actual policy decisions. They're the ones. They're in charge of this. This doesn't go to a vote. The science czar gets to do what he wants, within reason, of course. But why you have to, it makes you question, okay, if this is who you are at your core, you've written books about this. You've talked about forcible sterilization and mandatory abortions for women, taking their children away from them, giving to other families. It's crazy stuff. And you're Obama, and you're going to bring this guy into your science position as science czar? What does that say about Obama? It has to be a tacit endorsement of this, or else he wouldn't do it. Eugenics is one of those topics that sounds really far-fetched from the outside. If you're somebody that's just kind of casually hearing about this, it sounds it just sounds like something that is limited to like the Nazis, because they were known for that. I mean, there was a component of the Nazi mentality that was known for wanting to thin out the herd, get rid of the undesirables, and we all know, you know, the stories about how they went about doing that. But it's not limited to the Nazis, and it didn't end with them. It's still going forward. You know, when you think, oh, Donald Trump's a horrible president, just remember that Hillary Clinton's hero was Margaret Sanger. She received the Margaret Sanger Award and was so thrilled about it. Margaret Sanger wanted all the black people dead. All right. She wanted babies dead too. She wanted everybody dead. And that's Hillary Clinton's hero. So let's be very careful about these politicians and who their influences are. You know that Obama and Hillary were super influenced by Saul Alinsky in his book Rules for Radicals. And there are some really dangerous ideas in that book as well. There are dangerous ideas in The Population Bomb by Paul Ehrlich. And yet, he's not being shunned. He's not being run out of town. He's being promoted. We see a lot of that. And it makes you ask, well, why? Why is it? Well, the answer is that the politicians are not in control. I think we kind of know that. The people that are above the politicians, the people that put the politicians into positions of power, they want this. Those families, those Rothschilds, Rockefellers, DuPonts, Carnegies, Vanderbilts, you know, those families, those ruling families, as you know, as they're known, they make the decision on who becomes the politicians. It's a selection process, not an election process. You go to the ballot box and vote your brains out. It's not going to change anything, because the way the system is set up is that the people that are at the top are putting the politicians in there so that they look bad, and the rulers remain hidden in the shadows. And so part of what the politicians' arrangement is that they have to do what they're told. And part of what they're told to do is to institute policies that thin out the herd, that get rid of all of these people. Because whether you're a politician or a psychopathic ruling family, it still remains the same that if there's too many people, you start to lose your control and your grip on society. And so they realize that. And so their solution is, let's have fewer people. So they ask they tell the politicians to put into place these programs that will accomplish these goals, which is why you get people like Hillary Clinton loving Margaret Sanger. It's why you get Henry Kissinger saying that the world's population needs to be reduced by 50%. That's why you get that. They're at the top, you know, they're at high positions in the government because they think like this. They think the right way as far as the controllers are concerned. And the right way to think is that all these stupid people need to go. And we're going to make sure that you do that. If you like this show, if you're not standing on the side of a ledge ready to jump off a building after listening to all this depressing shit, please share the show with people that you know, people you think might like it. Put on social media. Do whatever you can. I certainly do appreciate it. If you want to check me out, you can find me at theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. My book is available in paperback at Amazon and barnesandnoble.com only. If you like the digital version, you can go to the website. There's a PayPal link there. You send me, donate more than $10, and I will send you two digital versions of it, the EPUB and the PDF. And you can take those and share them with your friends and family. Thanks so much. Talk to you again soon.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.